Welcome one, welcome all, to the Court of the Trashy Royals, where we assemble each week to reveal and revel in the tales of our betters behaving badly. My name is Stacy.
Hey friends, I'm Alicia. Thanks for joining us today as Dickie stands alone. Just him this week, and he's naughty enough to fill one episode just all by himself.
All by his lonesome.
That's it. So many stories about, Louis Mountbatten, what happens with him after the death of his beloved Edwina. There's an FBI file.
Of course there
is. It's pretty nefarious. Before we begin today's Trashy Royals adventure, we do have a few fine and good nobles to thank this week. I want to give a big shout out to Elizabeth C. for the nicest email. We really appreciate you so, so much. I got another special shout out and a big happy birthday trashy wish to our friend Katie from Queen's Podcast. We are celebrating your birthday with you, girl. Hope it was incredible.
And last but not least, Kathleen R., our most recent Patreon supporter. Thank you, Kathleen. And all of our Patreon supporters getting their Trashy Royals early and ad-free every week for $2 a month, easy as you please.
Patreon.com/Trashy Royals Podcast is the place to go to find out more about that. But right now, it is time to get into wrapping up the series. Let us anon to Louis Mountbatten after the death of Edwina, single and ready to mingle. Oh, Stacy, I love it when the trashy tropes just continue on and on. Over on Trashy Divorces, we have a pretty big red flag that has existed in that universe in relationships, which we call poster on the wall. I've got a fun poster on the wall to introduce today's story. On the India Hicks podcast, remember, daughter of Pamela Hicks, granddaughter of Edwina. Fascinating little podcast where Lady Pamela Hicks goes on and talks and talks and talks about all of her stories. Lady Pamela recalled that time where Grace Kelly came to visit her family at Broadlands.
And this would be while she was Princess Grace of Monaco?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
No. Okay. This is very long ago. Now, Broadlands, as you remember, family home of Edwina. Broadlands, no stranger to famous guests, so the Mountbatten daughters, Patricia and Pamela, were used to movie stars and politicians and royals from around the world visiting their home. But Lady Pamela Hicks said that while some of the famous visitors were dazzling, listen to who's on the dazzling list, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Lady Pamela will go on and say less dazzling, Grace Kelly. She was kind of disappointing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Here's what Lady Pamela says. Grace Kelly came for a weekend at Broadlands and she was beautiful. But she spent the whole time complaining that you couldn't get colored Kleenex in England. Pink Kleenex.
I don't have any response to that.
Not going to kid you, I was a little happier in France when the toilet paper was pink.
The toilet paper was pink in Paris.
It made going a whole lot more festive when there's pink toilet paper. I get that, Grace Kelly. I don't know if I would have complained about it. Maybe she had been in Paris and couldn't get her pink. Who knows? But that's not the point of this. The point of this is Grace Kelly said something else during that visit that absolutely thrilled Dickie, the subject of our story today. Grace Kelly apparently spills the beans to the family that she had long admired Lord Mountbatten, and had quite a crush on him when she was younger, revealing that she had even kept a cutout photograph of him in her room.
Wow.
So even Grace Kelly had a poster on her wall, and
it
was
Louis Mountbatten.
Dickie Mountbatten.
Unbelievable.
You betcha. To answer your question, Stacy, this visit was well before Grace Kelly married Prince Rainier.
Okay.
After she did, the Prince and Princess of Monaco, believe it or not, actually become part of the Mountbatten social circle. When Mountbatten was assassinated by the IRA in 1979, Prince Rainier and Princess Grace attended the funeral and sat in a very prominent place amidst the other European royals. Everybody's got a poster on the wall, it appears. Okay, Dicky, goodness. Let's talk about his relationship with Prince Charles a little bit.
Oh, right, right, because he was a mentor.
Very much. Mm-hmm. Louis Mountbatten did develop a very close relationship with his great-nephew, Prince Charles. He had a very close relationship with Charles's father, Prince Philip. Remember, Louis and Philip forged their true bond after the passing of Prince George.
Right.
Who was Philip's first kind of father figure mentor.
Right, because he had had such an unstable childhood. And then, yeah, Prince George, Louis's brother, became a stand-in. And then he passed away young, I think, from cancer or so.
Yes. So Louis Mountbatten, Prince Charles, their relationship, the two of them, really deepens in the early 1970s when Prince Charles is posted to Portsmouth during his time in the Royal Navy.
Right.
Prince Charles would frequently come to visit Broadlands during his posting, and the two, Dicky and Charles, enjoyed each other's company very, very much. When they're not together, they write to each other often.
I would imagine that Dicky encouraged him into the Navy where he had had his own illustrious career, or was having his own illustrious career.
Well, he knows Charles is going to be the future king, mm-hmm. right? He, of course, Louis is always watching out for Charles. In November of 1972, in one of these letters, Louis Mountbatten writes to Prince Charles, "I miss you a lot, for there is no one whose company I enjoy more, as I expect you realize."
Hmm.
They're really quite fond of each other. They love each other a whole lot. Charles responds with a letter that includes this little phrase, "As you know only too well, to me it, Broadlands, has become a second home in so many ways, and no one could ever have had such a splendid honorary grandpapa in the history of avuncular relationships." Honorary grandpapa.
Avuncular relationships. Yes, that's how people talk.
The relationship between Prince Charles and Lord Mountbatten continued to grow closer, in large part because Charles had such a strained relationship with his own father, Prince Philip, and perhaps longed for that fatherly role in his life. Mountbatten, for his part, really relishes filling that grandpapa fatherly thing, mm-hmm. avuncularly, of course.
Well, and he and Edwina also had daughters, so right. There was probably some of that. Like, ooh, a son I never had.
Well, and Louis loved becoming Prince Charles's mentor. I mean, it's his favorite thing. He's also thrilled to have that much influence over the young man in his formative years that will one day be king. And honestly, Dicky, never shy about giving advice to anyone, Dicky had input into every single aspect of Charles's life. They were tight as ticks, thick as thieves.
All of the above.
All of the above. Royal biographer Sarah Bradford wrote, "Uniquely placed to instruct the prince with authority and intimacy about the governance of Britain and to help him interpret the duties and opportunities which faced him." By the time Charles was 23, Mountbatten had become his closest confidant and the greatest single influence of his life. Dickie's my best friend, so he's going to have input on everything. And at this time, one of the most important areas of Prince Charles's life, and one that Mountbatten wanted to strongly influence, was Charles's love life and his choice of a future bride. One way Louis did this was by opening up his home, Broadlands, into a safe haven for Charles to bring his girlfriends and prospective romantic partners through the years.
Of which there were many.
Louis had done the very same thing earlier for Charles's father, Prince Philip. Andrew Loney writes, "Just as he had allowed Philip before he married to use Broadlands to meet young women, so Dicky encouraged Charles to discreetly bring girlfriends, such as Georgiana Russell, now Lady Boothby, to the house. One visitor that spring of 1972 was Lady Jane Wellesley, the daughter of the Duke of Wellington, who was to be his girlfriend for the next year." Mountbatten's advice for Charles regarding potential love interests was well-meaning, but almost certainly contributed to Charles and his ultimate decision to marry a very young, very innocent Diana Spencer instead of marrying for love. Some of Mountbatten's advice to Charles was, "You're not going to like this. This might upset y'all. It upset me when I read this. Here's Louis's big advice. I believe in a case like yours that a man should sow his wild oats and have as many affairs as he can before settling down." I agree with that. Everybody should date. The more people you date, the better chances you're going to find the one that matters. I agree with that. Check. But for a wife, he should choose a suitable, attractive, and sweet character girl before, all capital letters, she met anyone else she might fall for.
I think this quote came up when we covered Charles and Diana on our Trashy Divorces podcast. And yeah, it did seem to roll the dice in a particularly terrible way for Princess Diana.
So Louis keeps writing, "If that wasn't enough, you have as much fun as you want, but find a virgin and before she looks at anyone else." Louis continues, "After all, your mummy never seriously thought of anyone else after the Dartmouth encounter with your father when she was just 13. I think it is disturbing for women to have experiences if they have to remain on a pedestal after marriage."
It is disturbing for women to have experiences. He was married to Edwina Mountbatten. What?
I mean, maybe. That's probably where he's coming from. I think it's disturbing for women to have experiences if they have to remain on a pedestal after marriage.
Lord.
So certainly, Louis had some very strong suggestions of the type of girl Charles should be looking for. What is it? Suitable, attractive, and sweet-charactered girl. Louis doesn't just have requirements for what Charles should be looking for. He's got an actual contender. She could have been a contender. Who is Louis pushing up the chain? His very own granddaughter. The 17-year-old Amanda Knatchbull.
So he was really aiming to get that Mountbatten line right up
you
on
better
the
believe it.
Okay.
Andrew Loney writes that Louis would instruct his granddaughter Amanda on how to woo Charles. He would enlist fashionable aristocratic women to take Amanda to Paris on clothes hunting trips to smarten her up. Charles was open to the suggestion. He and Amanda began spending a good deal of time together. Over the next 5 years, the two would be together often in London and Broadlands. They would also frequently travel to the Bahamas together. Sybilla O'Donnell hosted them at her home in Nassau and said, "I was given strict instructions by Dickie to leave them alone as much as possible, which I did," and then they went to Eleuthera. Dickie tried very hard to get them together. So are you asking, what could have gone wrong with this plan? Prince Charles actually agreed that Amanda Knatchbull was an ideal choice for marriage. She was a catch. Charles even proposes to her.
Oh, wow.
But Amanda turns him down.
Is that because he was still seeing Camilla?
No. Oh. This is long.
I think it overlaps a bit, but
it could. No, but Amanda turns him down, and I'm going to tell you why. She's very fond of Charles, but she knows they're not in love. In his authorized biography of Prince Charles, Jonathan Dimbleby wrote, "They liked each other, but they couldn't fall in love. There was no chemistry. They had known each other too long since they were children." Which reminds me of just a line that I can never get over that I love so much. There's a particular book by Florence King called Confessions of a Failed Southern Lady. It is a delightful book. It is a rip-roaring, hilarious good time. There's a particular line in there where Florence is talking about being in high school and dating boys in high school. This is where she takes it. I just have to get to this beginning point to get to the end of this phrase because it's so good. Florence King writes about these boys in high school and how there was no romantic interest. "We had thrown up together, wet our pants together, picked our noses together for so many years that we looked upon each other with the dull eyes of the long married." With the dull eyes of the long married. I mean, they're kids.
Yeah.
But we picked our noses together. We wet our pants together.
Sure.
I know I'm not in love with you, Charles. I'm sorry, I can't marry you.
Yeah, it's more a sibling thing than... because obviously cousins is no barrier to marriage. But yeah, it's more like, you know... Yeah.
We looked upon each other with the dull eyes of the long married. Okay. So Amanda Knatchbull doesn't work out, and that's okay. Charles probably is going to have some success. Who knows, really? We're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we are going to get to Dickie and some scandalous rumors and some speculation.
We'll see you on the flip.
I mean, I don't want to start any blasphemous rumors. I feel like singing Depeche Mode. Right? Dickie's life after Edwina continued to be full of service, naturally. Louis, always duty bound.
First Sea Lord.
But also full of rumor. Louis was very devoted to his growing family. Both of his daughters had families of their own. Dickie really likes being a grandfather. He spends a considerable amount of time with his grandchildren. One of the most persistent rumors about Lord Mountbatten was that he was bisexual. Today, that doesn't sound like anything shocking, but then it was far more unacceptable for a man to be a bisexual. Like, Mountbatten, what? Nobody disputed Edwina's bisexuality, but Dickie's was never as blatant as Edwina's. This is not the trashy part. There's no part in me that's saying being bisexual is trashy.
Absolutely.
The trashy part is coming with the underage boys.
Yes, that is the part I figured was in the story. Yes.
Bisexuality, not trashy. Mm-hmm. So for Dickie to be bisexual, even the rumor of it, kind of scandalous at that time. His family denies that he was bisexual. As for people outside of Louis's family, It is a very controversial and debated issue. There are contradictory reports from people who knew him well. Let's go ahead and explore what his friends or detractors or the FBI has to say about Dickie's rumored bisexuality and the trashier part, the even darker rumors about his fascination with teenage boys. Mm-hmm. Mountbatten's friendships with openly gay men like Noel Coward, Tom Dryberg, Peter Murphy, along with the speculation that he and Edwina had engaged in threesomes, all contribute to the rumors that maybe Dickie swings both ways. Dickie, as a personality, is also a very tactile, emotional man. These are characteristics that during his lifetime were considered to be on the feminine side of the scale, a little bit more effeminate, so that contributes to the rumors. However, after the death of his beloved Edwina, the speculation about Dickie's sexuality begins to grow. On this topic, Andrew Loney quotes Mountbatten's official biographer, Philip Ziegler. If Mountbatten was a practicing homosexual, he was risking everything he valued most to indulge a fleeting appetite. In that case, his character was wholly different from anything delineated in this biography. All of his naval contemporaries who have expressed an opinion on the subject, and some worked very close to him, state emphatically that they do not believe the stories to be true. Sex itself was not a matter of great importance to him. To suggest that such a man was actively homosexual seems to be flying not merely in the face of evidence, but also of everything we understand about his character. Mountbatten's longtime secretary, John Barat, agrees with Ziegler. He'll say, "He certainly was not homosexual. The allegations that he consorted with young naval officers at his house in Kennerton Street are preposterous. There is no possibility that he could have kept any homosexual activities secret from me in the intimate relationship that we had over the last 14 years of his life." Okay, but these aren't the only people with opinions on the subject. Andrew Loney does cover the topic thoroughly in his book about the Mountbattens. One of the other opinions that Loney includes is from Derek Meekins, who was a member of Mountbatten's staff in 1948. Derek Meekins says, "There were rumors he was homosexual. I was surprised, but not that surprised, though I never saw any evidence. He was very manly. I had heard about friendships with other women, they were quite happy to go their own way. However, there were many opinions on the other side of the issue. Journalist Nicholas Davies wrote a series of articles in the Daily Mirror in 1975, revealing details of an alleged homosexual ring in the lifeguards' barracks in London that Mountbatten was involved in. Nicholas Davies writes, "A number of young guardsmen informed me that Mountbatten was involved, and they gave detailed signed statements of alleged visits to his Kennerton Street home. As a result of an internal investigation by the Army, 5 lifeguards officers and 36 guardsmen were found guilty of homosexual activities and dismissed from the regiment."
But nothing on Louis. No. I assume they didn't investigate Lord Mountbatten.
Louis's fine. He's not going to be...
Yeah,
Louis's
yeah, yeah.
not dismissed. Yeah. Leslie Hutchinson's biographer, remember Hutch?
Oh, sure.
From last week. Charlotte Brees is Leslie Hutchinson's biographer. Charlotte Brees will write about these rumors as well, saying, "As for Lord Mountbatten's bisexuality, many of those I interviewed were convinced of it. When he was Supreme Allied Commander in Southeast Asia, several officers boasted of their liaisons with him. A naval friend came across him on an island where he was serving in Malta, nude, in flagrante with another officer."
Hmm.
These and other stories that refer to Mountbatten's sexual proclivities have been consistently denied by their family. Some of the rumors had a humorous slant, like someone claiming that most of Mountbatten's gay friends called him Mount Bottom. But the stories of his sexual exploits get darker when it started to be revealed that there was a possibility that Mountbatten had a special preference for young male lovers, even boys who were still in school. This is the trashy part. Let's get into Louis's FBI file. These are certainly the most disturbing claims, and these claims were not revealed about Mountbatten until after his death. The FBI's file on Mountbatten didn't emerge until 2019. But most all documents in the file were mysteriously, somehow, soon destroyed. When the file was uncovered in 2019, all the case just sort of goes away at the request of the British government.
Not shocked.
Why, oh why, would the British government request for the FBI files on Louis Mountbatten be destroyed 40 years after his death? And how do we even know that it happened? Andrew Loney, when researching for his book about the Mountbattens, discovered that the FBI had a file on both Edwina and Dickie. You don't think he's the only. Come on. Edwina, of course, has an FBI file.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was lobbying the U.S. government ahead of World War II,
correct,
for instance. I mean, of course they would. But also so much to put into the file because of who she was.
I think you mean the FBI filing cabinet,
yes,
of Edwina.
Just called, yeah, just with Edwina written on the front.
Louise is right next door. Andrew Loney, when he's researching his book, makes a request to the FBI for any files that the agency has on Mountbatten. Loney was told they had all been destroyed. When I asked when the destruction had taken place, the American authorities candidly admitted, "After you asked for them."
Oh, God. Catch 22. Take that, journo.
Right? Isn't when you asked for them? Yeah.
We saw your FOIA and we pulled out our lighters.
While there is no direct evidence of it, Andrew Loney has publicly stated that the destruction of the documents had, quote, clearly been carried out at the request of the British government, unquote. Mm-hmm. Why, oh, why would the British government do that? According to Loney, the FBI files alleged that Mountbatten had an interest in young boys. Andrew Loney reveals in his book that the source for many of the allegations against Mountbatten in those files came from Baroness Dices. Her name is Elizabeth de la Pore Beresford. Lady Dices is pretty much the main source. Let's go ahead and see part of what that FBI report read. She, Lady Dices, has been an intimate of the British Queen Elizabeth, Queen Mary, and her ladies-in-waiting. She states that in these circles, Lord Louis Mountbatten and his wife are considered persons of extremely low morals. She stated that Lord Louis Mountbatten was known to be a homosexual with a perversion for young boys. In Lady Dicey's opinion, he is an unfit man to direct any sort of military operations because of this condition. She stated further that his wife, Lady Mountbatten, was considered equally erratic, and that it was known that Paul Robeson, colored singer and actor, was her paramour. At the present time, Lady Dices is residing at the Plaza Hotel in New York and appears to have no special motive in making the above statements, with the exception of the fact that Lady Dices is greatly worried about the safety of her Paris home. She appears to be otherwise normal. Knowing that these FBI file allegations come from only one person makes them way less credible for sure. Although Lady Dices, Elizabeth de Poor Beresford, was very connected in the circle.
Yeah, it sounds like she was writing out World War II in New York in a luxury hotel in New York.
Not a bad way to do it.
And they just parked an agent at the bar next to her and struck up a conversation. Is that probably how that went down?
She's saying them here. So one source, okay, sure, Lady Dices. However, the FBI documents were not the only time that Mountbatten was alleged to have a perversion for younger boys. It must also be remembered that most of the information that the FBI did have about Mountbatten was destroyed before anybody knew what it included because we asked for it. Now's a great time to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some more trashy trash trash. Oh my.
All right, Alicia, I know there's more on this particular facet of Dickie's life.
You know there's so much more. I'm not going to leave you hanging. Pour that tea so we can spill it. Here's some other trashy reports. Again, no shortage of people who have come forward with their own accounts of Mountbatten's trashy behavior. One of these people was a guy named Ron Perks. He was Mountbatten's driver in Malta in 1948. Go to the staff. The staff is always going to tell you what you want to know. Ron Perks claims to have driven Louis many times to an upmarket gay brothel used by naval officers called the Red House. He described the brothel as one of Mountbatten's favorite places.
I bet.
There's another man. His name is Anthony Daly. He wrote a memoir called The Abuse of Power about his own experiences as a quote-unquote rent boy to the rich and famous during the 1970s. In Anthony Daly's book, he writes, Mountbatten had something of a fetish for uniforms, handsome young men in military uniforms and beautiful boys in school uniform, which gets creepier. Andrew Loney also includes several accounts in his book, both of people claiming to have had sexual encounters with Mountbatten, and those who deny he was involved in sex with minors. In one account from a man who told him about being brought to Mountbatten in the summer of 1977 when he was 16 years old. If you have children, you may want to cover their ears for about 60 seconds. This man tells Andrew Loney about Mountbatten from when he was 16. He was very polite, very nice. I knew he was someone important. He asked if I wanted a drink or candy. He told me he liked dark-skinned people, especially Sri Lankan people, as they were very friendly and very good-looking. I remember he admired my smooth skin. We gave each other oral sex in a 69 position. He was very tender, and I felt comfortable about it. It seemed very natural. I know that several other boys from Kinkora were brought to him on other occasions. Stories like this about Mountbatten are plentiful, and while they are not proven, there are many people who claim to have had similar experiences. Okay, we're going to leave that there and get into this next section, which is titled A Romance with His Goddaughter, Tastes in Women, Shirley MacLaine, and a Few Automobile Heiresses. Take a deep breath. All right, here we go. In addition to his other exploits, Mountbatten had relationships with several women after Edwina's death. Most people agree that the most significant of these relationships was with his goddaughter. Remember, the daughter of Bunny.
Oh my God.
Edwina's lover, long-term lover. Her name is Sasha Phillips, later Sasha Abercorn. His personal secretary, Mountbatten's John Barrett, said about this. He loved beautiful girls, but the only one he really deeply loved apart from Edwina was his goddaughter Sasha, the Duchess of Abercorn. He told me that if he ever married again, it would have been to Sasha. Author Brian Hoey wrote that Sasha eventually became Mountbatten's closest companion and explains, Mountbatten and Sasha had become close in the years leading up to her marriage at the age of 20.
Oh, boy.
But it was after she became Marchioness of Hamilton, before her husband inherited the dukedom, that the relationship blossomed into the deep and lasting love that caused Mountbatten to reflect to his secretary, John Barrett, that she was the only woman he could have ever contemplated marrying after Edwina. He had professed love for many women, but said he had never considered marriage to any of them except Sasha. Was this feeling reciprocated? Oh, yes. Yes, it was.
Interesting.
Sasha later said that if Mountbatten had proposed to her when she was still single, she would have accepted. Now, keep in mind here that Sasha got married in 1966 when she was 20. In 1966, Louis Mountbatten was 66 years old. His daughter Patricia, if you remember, had been born in 1924. His daughter Pamela had been born in 1929. Sasha was born in 1946.
Yikes.
Sasha went on to explain, it was a huge physical and spiritual attraction on both sides, and the 45-year gap in our ages just melted away. Just like ice cream on a hot summer day. Mountbatten, you know, has a few girlfriends. Some of those were the wives of his fellow naval officers.
Of course.
Andrew Loney writes, the couple would be invited down to Broadlands for the weekend, and the men then distracted by the offer of a day's fishing or shooting, or would have to return to work on the Sunday night, and the wife would stay on until the following day. Sometimes the wife came down on the Friday to be joined later by her husband. Mountbatten also liked young, unmarried women as well. His daughter Patricia said about her father and his girlfriends that they tended to be youngish, very pretty with long legs and a small waist, rather Victorian figures, really. Girls don't have to be intelligent either. He could be quite attracted to someone who wasn't that bright. If it was just going to be a minor flirtation, but all his real serious girlfriends were intelligent. There's more. Bill Evans, the once head of Mountbatten's private staff, recalls, all girls had their set dates. We knew where to be or not to be. He would go out riding and then return to bathe and change. He would put them in dressing rooms next to him. There were generally women in their 30s, young wives, very beautiful and always slim. The thinner the thighs, the better. We knew to stay away. He had a settee bed in the guest room, which linked to his room. He liked his women small-breasted like Edwina. I could tell when he was in the nookie mode.
Oh my God.
I could tell when he was in the nookie mode. John Barrett, again, former private secretary, will agree with Bill Evans on this, about Mountbatten's preferences. John Barrett says, he liked slim-hipped women with flat chests, very like Edwina. His ideal woman was the young Jane Fonda. An all-time favorite film of his was Cat Ballou. He loved riding with a woman, which was almost an obsession, a kink. His big turn-on was riding boots and jodhpurs, but only when they were worn by young women with long, slim legs. Is it creepy yet? I'm going to make it a little creepier. Barrett also adds that Mountbatten, helpfully, good times, because, you know, when you got one kink, why not throw a few more? He was also a voyeur, and he kept a slide viewer in his bedroom. My curiosity was aroused. As soon as I had the chance, I looked at the slides, Every single one was of a young woman in riding gear, wearing high boots and spurs. There was nothing pornographic about them. The girls were fully dressed, but he obviously got a thrill of seeing young women in boots spurring the horses.
Yes, the pornography is the friends we made along the way.
He also kept one or two magazines under lock and key. They were mildly pornographic, but nothing dreadful. He told me he was particularly fascinated by the story of a riding mistress who made her pupils sit astride a wooden horse and whip them. Anything to do with riding turned him on.
This seems like a particularly English trait. All of the royal ladies and their pony boys.
We've talked about horse girls and pony boys. I guess Dickie's a pony boy. Big time pony boy. All right, many moons ago, you covered the trashy divorces of Shirley MacLaine over on our sister podcast. Let me tell you about the love affair with Louis Mountbatten and Shirley MacLaine. In the early 1960s, Dickie met Shirley MacLaine when she was, at the time, if you remember, enjoying a very wide open marriage with her husband, Steve Parker. Shirley was at the peak of her fame at that time, just having starred in The Apartment. Dickie brought Shirley to a dinner party at Jack Warner's house. He wrote in his diary that evening, "I drove Shirley back in my car. She certainly is a very sweet girl." Christopher Plummer, actor, also attended that particular dinner and remembers, "After dinner, we were all marched into the screening room to watch a sneak preview of Irma La Douce. Mountbatten and Shirley were two rows in front of me. His arm was around her and tisk tisk." Was it the boozy haze clouding my heavy eyes, or did I not catch sight of them spooning in the dark? Another time that Shirley and Louis attended a party together, Louis writes in his diary, "I must say Shirley is a very sweet and amusing girl, and we got on like a house on fire." That same summer, Shirley was a guest at Broadlands, along with Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Rex Harrison, and Indira Gandhi. William Evans, the head of Mountbatten's private staff, said of Shirley MacLaine, "She was a very bright cookie. She often stayed at Broadlands, or they would meet in New York, and she became a good friend. She often acted as Dickie's hostess and could hold court with anyone from heads of state down. The affair went on for many years. They hit it off immediately, and she was number one for a long time." But it's not only Shirley MacLaine. There are a number of other wealthy heiresses and otherwise famous socialites that Dickie amuses himself with. One of those, her name is Barbara Cartland. She's a very famous writer and also the mother of Rain Spencer, stepmother to Diana, Princess of Wales. We know her in
Acid Rain.
Gossipy culture as Acid Rain. Barbara Cartland was a frequent companion. Although it was platonic for the majority of their relationship, another good friend and possible lover was Carola Rothschild. Louis goes on to have a romance with Janie Lindsay, a former girlfriend of JFK and David Niven. She would later marry, you ready, Lord Beaverbrook's son, Max Aitken, and then Robin Compton. Holy cats, that is Spiderweb City I can't even unpack right now. Janie Lindsay and Dickie will remain close friends throughout their lives. There are a lot of letters between the two that survive. Mountbatten's letters to Janie always start with, "Darling Janie." Let's go ahead and add in a few rich automobile heiresses along the way. One of those, Christina Ford, who was an Italian socialite and beauty who married Henry Ford II. Dickie decided he just had to meet Christina Ford when he sees a picture of her wearing, what do you think, long, slim, black boots over the knees. And then there was Lydia Mahaldo, a General Motors heiress who was married to Francis Farr, one of Wall Street's richest salesmen. Dickie would see both of these women during his frequent trips to New York and other parts of the United States.
So a girl or boy in every port is what I'm hearing.
I think that sounds about right. So let's go ahead and wind this story down. Mountbatten does have a home in County Sligo, Ireland. That home is Classy Bawn. By the late 1970s, Louis is spending time there in the summer. It continues to be a favorite place for his family to gather. Again, he really likes spending time with his family and his, you ready, 11 grandkids.
Hmm.
When I say he enjoyed being a grandfather.
Just with two daughters though, right?
Patricia had 8 children. Pamela had 3.
Wow. Okay.
In August of 1979, all of the Mountbattens were at Classy Bawn. On August 27th, several members of the family went out on Mountbatten's fishing boat, Shadow 5, to collect lobster pots they had set the day before. At 11:30 a.m., Dickie Patricia, Patricia's husband, his 83-year-old mother, and Patricia's 14-year-old twins, Nicholas and Timothy, along with a 15-year-old local boy named Paul Maxwell, who helped on the boat, all set off in search of the lobster pots. At 11:45 a.m., as they were reaching their destination, the members of the Provisional IRA, who had been watching through binoculars, pressed a button to activate the bomb they had planted on board the boat the night before. Recalling the incident, Timothy Natchbull said, "My family and I were relaxed and happy going out into a flat, calm sea in my grandfather's fishing boat. I remember climbing onto the roof of the cabin and talking to my grandfather, who was steering. I have a very distant memory of the sound of the explosion and of a very violent sensation, then nothing." Lord Louis Mountbatten died instantly. His torso was found floating face downwards in the water. His legs had been blown off in the blast. Also killed in the bombing was Patricia's mother-in-law and her 14-year-old son, Nicholas. Sadly, the 15-year-old local boy, Paul Maxwell, who was just there to earn a little extra money helping the family on their boat, was also killed. Lady Patricia was terribly injured and would remain in the hospital for some time. Her husband and their son Timothy were also hurt in the explosion but survived. Patricia tells the Daily Telegraph in 2008, "My own memory is of a vision of a ball exploding upwards and then of a coming to in the sea and wondering if I would be able to reach the surface before I passed out. I have very vague memories now and again of floating among the wood and debris, being pulled into a small rubber dinghy before totally losing consciousness for days." Shortly after the bomb was detonated, the Provisional IRA issued a statement taking credit for the murders. They referred to it as the execution of Lord Louis Mountbatten. When it came to his funeral, Dickie went out in grand style. He had actually already planned his funeral down to the smallest detail. The code name for Mountbatten's funeral was Operation Freeman, and it had been in place, the operational code name, since 1967. Mountbatten was very clear that he wanted a magnificent state occasion. His instructions were outlined over 8 pages, you ready, with a 4-page appendix.
Go, Dickie.
Dickie always joked that he would be sad to miss his own funeral. That's how great it was gonna be.
Okay.
Lord Mountbatten's funeral does take place on Wednesday, September 5th, 1979, at Westminster Abbey. 1,400 guests attended. His funeral was televised in over 20 countries, and his funeral procession included a crowd of 50,000 spectators. The gun carriage was pulled by 130 sailors. His pallbearers included 4 admirals, 3 generals, and a marshal of the Royal Air Force. Louis was given a 19-gun salute from the King's Troop Royal Horse Artillery, and Prince Charles delivered a 30-minute eulogy. Later that month, Stephen Roskill, a senior Royal Navy officer, spoke at a service at Cambridge. Part of his address said, "It is certainly the case that when Mountbatten was born, a fairy godmother endowed him most lavishly with gifts, good looks and a fine presence, courage and determination, a very quick and original mind, and the capacity to win influential friends. Undoubtedly, he made the greatest possible use of these gifts. There was yet another service given at St. Paul's in December 1979. This service had about 2,000 people attend, where Prince Charles again delivered the address. Prince Charles described his grandpapa figure, Louis Mountbatten, this way: a constantly active brain that was never allowed a moment's rest. There was always a new challenge to overcome, fresh projects to be set in motion, more opposition to be defeated, all of which were pursued with a relentless and almost irresistible single-mindedness of purpose. Although he could certainly be ruthless with people when the occasion demanded, his infectious enthusiasm, his sheer capacity for hard work, his wit made him an irresistible leader among men. And that, my trashy darlings, is the conclusion of Dickie Solo, the arc of Edwina and Dickie, Trashy Royals, more stories, stories for a lifetime.
I think I'm going to title this episode Dickie Solo, like Han Solo, but so much more Mountbatten.
What a story. So many spider webs.
I mean, I feel like they had to do it twice just to accommodate all of the people that he and Edwina had slept with in their lives.
I mean, you ain't kidding. Two complicated, interesting, fascinating lives. Dickie and Edwina with connections and stories that go on for through the galaxies, you could say. Thank you, one and all. I sure hope y'all enjoyed that. We are going to be coming back to you next week with not Edwina and Dickie.
No, we're going to do some palate cleansing for a bit before we dive into any other longer projects.
Oh, I've got a long project coming.
I know
coming.
You do. I'm excited about it, but
I can't even stand how excited I am.
I'm also excited about some palate cleansing, so.
Same,
We're going to go very modern. I have a very modern story for us next week.
We sure hope you join us for that. In the meantime, if you're looking for some other trashy stories, be sure to check out Trashy Divorces. That is another podcast you and I do, Stacy. A lot of connections in some previous trashy divorces in today's story.
Yeah. Well, it's only because these two slept with literally everyone else alive on the planet at the time. So
give me the tea, pour it more and more and more. Y'all, we can't tell you again how much we appreciate you supporting the pod, telling your friends, your kind emails, your nice reviews, your support on Patreon. Y'all are simply the tops, the bee's knees.
Friends, until we meet again, I want you to polish up your crown.
I want you to keep your eye on the throne. We're going to be switching it around and getting out of England for a little while.
Oh, thank God.
So many crowns in the world to discover.
There are so many other languages with words we can mispronounce.
That is the truth. I'm looking forward, really, to that. Big love, everybody. Have a tremendous rest of the week. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.